Welcome into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM, VeritasWellness.com. Hey, you can always sign up for wellness classes at VeritasWellness.com. Also, check out the website at VeritasMedical.com for archived shows. And again, you're listening to Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, You're the Cure, right here on AM 580 at 95.9 FM. Along the way, if you have any questions, comments, feel free to do that at any time. You can certainly do that at 806-745-5800. That's 806-745-5800 along the way. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Wade. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. So you got the resolution. You're going to get back in shape and do all this.
That's right.
Go to the gym. And
did 10 push-ups this morning. I've been working out. 2020 was my year of really getting after it. We're going to have Tim DeBus back on here. Veritas Movement's going to be highlighted.
Awesome.
For our Veritas members, we're going to get Tim DeBus and GridWorks going. We'll get Tim back out here to talk about that and to talk about his year of transitioning. We had him on many months ago, and he was transitioning his local farm from non-organic to organic cotton. So we need to have him back on and tell us how that transition went this year.
Fantastic.
But 2020, I'm determined, at least in my sphere of influence, to focus on more important and deeper things and really going straight to the community. I've decided this last year has been so interesting with the censorship and the lack of or the suppression of free speech. That's probably my biggest aha take-home moment. Was the way that I personally have been suppressed in my free speech. But doctors around the country have been suppressed in their free speech.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
And there's so much conflict of interest. And to see medicine drug into politics like it has been, I was just rewatching the Senate testimony of Dr. Corey from early December when he was on Ron Johnson's committee talking about ivermectin. And the guy is just pleading to the NIH to please look at their paper, look at their manuscript that has all the data, the randomized controlled trials, multiple randomized controlled trials, thousands of patients. And we'll get into that later in the show. But just listening to Dr. Corey, it's just like, what kind of world are we living in?
That ivermectin stuff is so great. I took it. It was wonderful.
Like I said, we'll get into that later. But yeah. The biggest eye-opening part of that, to me, is this is a well-respected doctor. And mm-hmm. It's not just him by himself. He's not just some lone guy out there. He's in a collaboration of multiple physicians, 10 or 12 physicians from around the country and even the world, highly respected, the most publicized in their specialty of critical care. So these are ICU critical care hospital doctors. These aren't just Joe Schmo like me out in the boondocks in an outpatient clinic. These guys are widely published, over 2,000 published studies in their career, and they have to go to a partisan committee hearing and plead. I mean, he almost started crying, just for the NIH to look at the data. It seems overwhelming, and that was his word, I think, overwhelming and a mountain of data. And his testimony was not widely distributed on any news that I saw, and social media deleted it, censored them, censored their Facebook page, censored their YouTube page. I mean, I looked up the YouTube press conference of Dr. Corey and colleagues down at Houston Memorial Hermann. I think it was December 4th. You can go look it up. And as of this weekend, there are 54,000 views in a month. I'm like, there should be 54 million views mm-hmm. what these guys put out there. But again, it's this censorship and free speech issue. So, you know, we could get super frustrated. I mean, I have been frustrated, of course, trying to look at it from a deeper, more spiritual, heavenly perspective, good versus evil and deception and all that. And don't get so frustrated I lose focus of what I'm supposed to be doing in my calling, which I believe my calling is to teach people the truth and then let them be informed and make a decision. It's all about informed. We'll talk about the vaccine later because I'm getting a ton of questions on that. I haven't made a video on it. We haven't done a radio show on it. So we'll talk about it in the second half of the show, the vaccine for COVID. And again, it's all about informed decision making. You want to know what's best for your personal health and your family and your kids. You want to make a personal informed decision. Weigh your risk and benefit for you personally. And then decide what's best for you. That's what America is about. That's what our healthcare system is supposed to be about, I think. Individual decisions between you and your doctor. So that being said, the censorship and the lack of full informed consent and education across the board is we're going to go straight to the people. So we're going to double down on our efforts or triple down on our efforts to go straight to the community. So we're working on some things at Veritas, revamping some things, going to get some courses lined up, working on a course right now. We have our wellness course you mentioned at the top of the show, veritaswellness.health. You can sign up for that. And I just threw that together kind of haphazardly middle of last year just to try to get the word out that the terrain, which we've talked about before, trumps the germ. If COVID doesn't kill you, what does? And we know COVID by itself doesn't. The studies are clear on this. 6% of the people actually died of just COVID. 94% of the people had underlying conditions. It's these underlying comorbid conditions like obesity, diabetes, mostly age. It's this combination of things that will increase your risk of being sick and going to the hospital and dying. We have control over the terrain. We have control over this metabolic syndrome that's engulfed our whole community and nation. 88% of people are not metabolically flexible. Those are the ones that are sitting ducks. So we're going to double our efforts going straight to the people. When the people know the truth, then they, as a group, can influence the politicians. Trying to go straight to the politicians showed to be had very limited impact. So we're going to go straight to the people with the truth and teach the truth in an open, honest, well-informed kind of way, evidence-based medicine kind of way. Again, the definition of evidence-based medicine, there's three parts to it. Most doctors, especially I'm seeing doctors employed by institutions, which are most doctors in America now. They work for some big hospitalized group of clinics or some conglomerate. Which, little tangent, got a text from a doctor in California over the weekend or over the holidays. Her neighbor went to a Kaiser Permanente clinic. This is one of these institutional groups of clinics and hospitals out in California. I think it's probably the largest in California. I don't know. But she sent out a photo of her neighbor went to a clinic diagnosed with COVID and was sent home with a box of basically what they recommended their treatment, which was a box of masks. Hand sanitizer, I think some mouthwash, and then there were some paper goods in there, paper towels, paper plates and forks and stuff, but it was just all this basically PPE type stuff. That was a box that this lady was recommended to take home from the Kaiser Permanente clinic. And then right next to that, they showed a picture from India and from Honduras. And these were separate photos. The picture from India was a pack. I'll try to find the name of this pack. I'll scroll back through my text in a minute, maybe at the break. But it contained zinc, doxycycline, an antibiotic, and ivermectin. Kind of like a Z-pack, except it was triple. It had the zinc and the doxy with the ivermectin. And they were handing this stuff out basically over the counter in India. Then in Honduras, it was hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, zithromycin, zinc, and I think there was vitamin D in it maybe. And again, a pack, just a Ziploc bag pack with the directions in it and over-the-counter availability. And just the disconnect there. We're supposed to be a leading health, we're supposed to be the smartest, greatest healthcare in the world. And we're giving out at Kaiser Permanente a box of masks and hand sanitizer. And in India and Honduras, they're giving out what the data I think clearly shows is very beneficial. So it's hard for the general public to understand and get their grasp all this. How could this disconnect be? How can we be hearing from the NIH and CDC and the Tony Fauci's of the world and all the leading public health officials one thing, and being hearing from these independent doctors like Dr. Corey at the Senate hearing, and Dr. Peter McCullough from Baylor in Dallas, who was in another Senate hearing talking about hydroxychloroquine. How can this be? How can we be so separated like this on the information and be fighting over the differences? So the public needs to be informed. We're going to do more and more classes, and we're going to advertise these classes. I've never advertised in all these years of Veritas Medical, and we're not going to be advertising for our medical clinic because we're booked there. We're booked for 6 months. We really can't handle many more patients there, or we can. It's just we're booked out. And I truly believe 90% of the people who are in our clinic or on the waiting list will get substantially better with whatever symptoms and diseases they're coming to us with if they take our class on the root cause of Western disease. What's the root cause and the common denominator between heart disease and cancer and Alzheimer's and diabetes and obesity and you name it, asthma and allergies, all the itises, colitis, arthritis, you insert the name sinusitis, it's all inflammation. Everything's inflammation. We've talked about it so many times. So inflammation comes from our diet and lifestyle. Typically, it's our diet and lifestyle that disrupt our terrain, causing our cells to not be able to make enough energy and clear the exhaust called free radicals. It's diet and lifestyle. The studies are clear on it. 95% of cancer is not genetics. It's diet and lifestyle. Same with heart disease. It's diet and lifestyle, not genetics. It's the diet and lifestyle that create the exhaust, the inflammation, the free radicals that turn on the bad genes. So the genes are in play, but they're not the root cause. The root cause is diet and lifestyle. So being able to get this message out there more aggressively is our goal for 2020. And we'll be announcing more things as we develop our websites and our courses over the next 2 months. Hopefully we'll have this done. And then we'll do probably a pretty aggressive marketing campaign here locally. Let's change one community, and that community can influence the region, and then the region can influence the state, and the state can influence the country, and the country will influence the world. And we'll play the piano with all 10 fingers. I mean, we'll do these classes nationwide and worldwide at the same time, but we're really going to focus on our local community development. We have so many amazing people here in this community who are producing amazing things, you know, amazing food, amazing products. We're going to really highlight cattle ranchers. One in particular, I'm going to speak at an event in early February. And we'll probably have these guys on the show next week, hopefully, to talk about the economics of beef production and the economics of your personal beef consumption. I'll talk about the health benefits of meat, organ meats in particular, but grass-fed local beef, and how smart it is to buy a half a beef or a whole beef and put it in your freezer. You'll have food security for when the next food shortage comes. And you'll have high-quality nutrition going into your mouth. These nutrients that are bioavailable. The body needs the right fats and proteins, amino acids, vitamins and minerals to build new cells that work right. These are found in high-quality meat products. And I'm not discounting some nutrients in the vegetables. I look at the vegetables as more the healing and cleansing, and the meats as more of the structural integrity and the daily building. If you want to build a cell, a new cell that works right, it's got to have the structural integrity and the foundational building blocks that's found in meats, high-quality meats, and especially locally raised. So we're going to really highlight and focus on local community folks who are developing great things where we can support each other, we can live in harmony, we can live in peace and love, and we can be one. I mean, that's really what we're trying to do, is walk in the truth as one, and we will stand out like a sore thumb in a good way, in a world where deception and half-truth and lies and corruption and love of money are manifesting so readily in the world today, all across all spectrums, not just medicine. So it's time for the righteous to stand up and speak the truth in love boldly, and then walk it out, live it, and support each other. And so that's our plan for 2020. So I'm excited about 2021. I'm excited about the year. We'll put 2020 in the rearview mirror. And we know the corrupt and the conflicted, the ones that love money, the root of all evil, the love of money, is going to continue to do what they do. But at the same time, you know, the ones that love righteousness will stand up and continue to be who they're supposed to be. And there'll be a stark contrast between the two. So our local community efforts are going to increase this year. Because bottom line, when you don't know the truth, then it keeps you from being who you're supposed to be. And when the whole community is hamstrung and deceived and off target and they can't be who they're supposed to be, the ripple effect is just, especially on our young kids, it's unbelievable. So we're going to continue to try to speak the truth in love and be who we're supposed to be. Real quick, I want to run through a few headlines before we hit the break, and then we have to talk about the vaccine after the break. And I do want to say, this show is for informational purposes. I'm not your doctor. Obviously, I'm not recommending or not recommending anything. I'm trying to bring information, data, studies, hard numbers, and then you decide. Be informed and decide. Unfortunately, what little I glance at mainstream media, corporate media, it's very one-sided. I don't watch corporate media much, so I can't say for sure locally or state or nationally how much ivermectin's been talked about, but I'm pretty sure not much. So here's some headlines. We're at the end of the year finally. So it was probably June or July when I first put up the slide on one of my videos on Facebook Live about overall all-cause mortality. Why do we need to look at all-cause mortality? The total number of people that died in the United States this year, which, of course, we're still gathering that data because the year just ended. But we started tracking this mid-July and comparing it to previous years. And what we've noted many times all throughout the year, and it hasn't changed, is it's tracking about the same as the previous years. Some years have been a little worse. Of course, our population in the United States is growing, so you have to take that into consideration, too. It's better to do deaths per 1,000 or deaths per 100,000 or deaths per million. And we'll I don't have that end-of-year data. I just have the raw data right now. And this is as of December 31st, 2020, CDC, 2,913,144. So 2.9 million deaths total in the United States. Now, that's not complete data. That was from 12/31, but it takes some days and weeks for the final data to come in. So it'll be higher than that. And then we'll have to see how many people live in the United States in 2020, and then we'll have to break that into deaths per million. But it's going to be in the neighborhood of where it's been the past in 2019, 2018, 17, 16. Some years are a little worse, some are a little better. The deaths per million kind of fluctuate here, you know, up and down a little bit, because some flu seasons are worse than others. But the point is, it's right in that ballpark, in that neighborhood. And in fact, I was looking at another Ivor Cummings video over the weekend, and I recommend everybody follow Ivor Cummings on Twitter or YouTube or wherever. Just check in on his channel every now and then. He does some great data analysis. And this particular video was looking, again, at Sweden, and he does Sweden a lot because, or studies their data, because it's readily available, but also because Sweden was a little more lenient in their lockdowns. And what this video by Ivor, and that's I-V-O-R, Ivor Cummings, just put that in your YouTube search bar or wherever. And the all-cause mortality, deaths per million, was worse with the flu season of, and I'm doing this off my memory, but I think it was 77 and 96 and maybe 93. But the point being, there were these other flu seasons in my lifetime that had more deaths per million than what our current data is in Sweden, and that's pretty similar throughout the world. And seems pretty clear because there's so much data out now that the 2 million people will die if we do nothing. 1 million will die in the United States if we lock down hardcore this year. And it just was way off. It didn't come to fruition. Even if you use the obviously inaccurate total numbers of 300-something thousand quote-unquote deaths. I mean, just this weekend I was talking to a gentleman. His grandfather was living in a nursing home, had COVID in the summer, I think July, was positive, had symptoms, got over it, and was symptom-free, and then died from a stroke, had a second stroke, I think in November, December, and passed away. And they labeled him COVID death. And we've heard numerous reports of this. It's clear. I mean, there's so many reports of this, from motor vehicle accidents to suicides to gallbladder disease, various different causes of death labeled as COVID. So that 330, CDC, like I mentioned earlier in the show, came out and said only 6% of these classified as COVID actually died from COVID. And I've filled out lots of death certificates in my years of being a doctor. And I can tell you it's a little bit difficult, especially in the elderly. Most of these older folks have multiple conditions. So they have diabetes, and they have heart disease, and they have congestive heart failure, and they get flu, and then their heart failure worsens, and they're in the hospital, and their sugar's high. And I mean, what did they really die of? Heart failure? Did they have a little heart attack, silent heart attack, silent MI, we call it? Was it just the flu? Did it develop into pneumonia? So was pneumonia the killer? Was flu the killer? Was it the diabetes, the heart disease? I mean, it's a mixture of all of it, obviously. Is something just tip them over the edge? So what do you actually put on the death certificate? I think it's pretty clear that has shifted over the past many months where COVID-19 has risen to the top. And John Hopkins put that study out late November. It looked at all-cause mortality and showed that it was not different from previous years, but that there was a decrease in the top 10 causes of death compared to previous years. 2020 saw a decrease in death certificates labeled heart disease, cancer, Alzheimer's, kidney disease, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, all the typical top 10 killers, all were down, while COVID was and influenza-like illness was up. So that's why we have to look at all-cause mortality. Again, I'm not trying to say we're not in obviously a tough flu season. I'm trying to bring some perspective to it. And overall, although locally in different parts of the country, there are time periods of intense strain on a particular hospital. I still would like to see how many actual beds were available versus staffed beds, and how many of those non-staffed beds weren't staffed because the staff was COVID positive on a PCR test or maybe symptomatic. And we'll talk more about the PCR test, the inaccuracy of that. Even the WHO came out last week or 2 weeks ago and said the PCR test cycle threshold's way too high. We need to tone it down into the mid-20s instead of 40. So we'll talk about that when we get home. But how many healthcare workers were sent home because of inaccurate testing or mild symptoms? How many were on ivermectin prophylactically? We'll talk about the benefits of prophylactic ivermectin. Different studies, really good studies that have come out to talk about that. So point is, overall deaths are similar. Many different institutions are showing that data. I really don't want to get into mask. I mean, we've kind of beat that drum or that horse till it's dead. Multiple studies have shown pre-COVID and now post-COVID, they're good for sick people. They're good for symptomatics people. So if you're sick, you self-quarantine. You socially distance. You mask up or cover your cough. Common sense. It's how it's always been. It's what the studies currently even show with COVID. If you're sick, those things work. If you're not sick, they don't. The whole notion of asymptomatic and pre-symptomatic spread, again, multiple studies. We've talked about it already. I'm not going to go into all that. They're very minimal to not even a factor at all if you're asymptomatic, which is the whole point of shutting down the whole society and masking everyone up, because thinking, well, you don't know you have the virus and you could spread it. What the studies have clearly shown is just it's not a large vector at all. Symptomatic people spread this, and symptomatic people in your own household spread this. But if you're symptom-free, not only are your rates of false positive going to skyrocket on the PCR test, but the different social distancing techniques and cover your, wear a mask aren't effective for asymptomatics. All right, we better take a break. When we get back, we'll look at C19study.com. That's a hydroxychloroquine. I think it's over 200 studies now, most of those peer-reviewed, some randomized controlled. And we'll look at ivermectin, IVMmeta.com. That's another website that looks at all the ivermectin data. Right now, just to give you a little preview, it's estimated that the probability that an ineffective treatment generated results as positive in these 28 ivermectin studies is estimated to be 1 in 268 million. Translation, the chances that ivermectin is really not what's causing these people to get better from COVID, that it's just chance, is 1 in 268 million. looking at all the hydroxychloroquine studies, it's now estimated to be 1 in 3 quadrillion chance that it's not the ivermectin that's doing the beneficial, causing the beneficial outcomes in those studies. So we'll get into that more. We'll talk about the vaccine when we get back. I'm Ben Edwards. You're the cure. Check out VeritasWellness.health to sign up for our wellness class at VeritasMedical.com for archived shows. We'll be right back.
Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM, VeritasWellness.com. You can sign up for wellness classes right there, VeritasWellness.com. Also, the website, you can check out past archived programs, VeritasMedical.com. You're listening to Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, right here on the show, You're the Cure. Of course, if you'd like to text in a question, you can certainly do so at 806-745-5800. That's 745-5800. Well, let's go to the text line real quick. Let's see here. I got some text to get to. Do we have to have a prescription for ivermectin? What do you think about humans using the ivermectin salve for animals that I've heard is available at Tractor Supply?
Yes, ivermectin is safe for humans. It's won the Nobel Prize, I think, in 2016.
Dewormer, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an antiparasitical. It's been used for decades, extremely safe, all used throughout Africa, South America. That's some of the studies. They looked at African countries that use ivermectin routinely for worms and parasites versus those that don't use another drug. And they looked at the COVID-19 data, and there was correlation. The countries that use ivermectin have much less COVID-19. They did this in South America, too. I think this study was a little better because they looked at individual countries like Brazil, Mexico, Peru. Certain regions of the countries, certain cities and regions used ivermectin, and other regions did not. So this is in-country, same data collection, same population. The regions that use ivermectin routinely had less COVID-19 than the regions that didn't. So, yes, you need a prescription for it if you're in America. Some countries, like I mentioned earlier, it's over-the-counter. And, no, I don't recommend using a doctor can't recommend. A medically licensed doctor cannot recommend using an over-the-counter animal-based product. It's the same ingredient, as far as I know, but I have to recommend you talk to your doctor. And if your doctor's not sure about ivermectin, just nicely, politely, send them to a couple different websites. One is IV, as in Victor, M, as in mother, IVM, Meta, M-E-T-A, Meta. .com. And that's a summary of all the different, it's a meta-analysis, which means a summary of studies on ivermectin. And this is 28 different studies that have been summarized, and I'll just read real quick. 100% of the 28 studies to date report positive effects. Early treatment is more successful, with an estimated reduction of 87% in the effect measured using random effects meta-analysis. Prophylactic use also shows high effectiveness. 100% of the 10 randomized controlled trials report positive effects with an estimated reduction of 74%. The probability that an ineffective treatment generated results as positive in these 28 studies is measured to be 1 in 268 million. That means what's the odds that these studies are just wrong? It was just chance. Ivermectin just happened to be there, and these people just randomly didn't get COVID or got better quickly. 1 in 268 million. Again, the website, IVMmeta.com. And then they could also go to the front lines, critical care. Let me get that. Critical Care Alliance. The website is COVID19criticalcare.com. And what that is the FLCCC Alliance. That's Dr. Corey. You can see his testimony at the Senate committee. You can get the protocols. You can read all the studies. You can get a summary page. You don't have to be a doctor or a scientist to read these studies. There's a good summary page. Just print that off. Hand it to your doctor. Show them the website. Most doctors, when they see this data, will be shocked, overwhelmed. I'll just highlight a couple that Dr. Corey talked about in his testimony. There was the first study I saw, he didn't mention this, but one of my mentors sent me this in April. It was published April 3rd, and it was just in the lab, not in people, but it showed they gave ivermectin in cell culture, and it stopped viral replication, 5,000% reduction. 5,000% reduction of viral replication in a test tube in the lab, which, you know, you can't translate that to people. But that was the very first study. And we're in the middle of this pandemic, epidemic. ICUs are full in New York at that time. This is a safe medicine. It's been around forever. Someone probably should have jumped on that and started giving it out. Well, in some countries they did. In Argentina and France and Egypt. There's a study in France. There's a nursing home that had a scabies outbreak. All the residents were put on ivermectin for scabies. And this was right at the time COVID-19 was coming through France. And what they noted in that study, this is going off memory, but it was about 1 out of 67 patients that required, I think 10 got sick out of the 67 nursing home patients. They were over 90 years old, multiple comorbid conditions. 10 out of 67 got sick. One required oxygen, no required hospitalizations, and no death. In this one nursing home, everyone was on ivermectin for scabies. They looked at other nursing homes around the community, 3,000 different residents in this study. In other nursing homes, 23% got sick, 5% died. That was an early study. Then Argentina put out a study. 800 healthcare workers took ivermectin prophylactically. I think it was a dose once a week for 2 weeks, and they followed them for 3 months. Zero got COVID-19 in the 800 that took it. There were 400 healthcare workers that did not take it in this study, and it was 58%, I believe, that got COVID-19. Pretty remarkable. There are multiple other studies that Dr. Corey and his group talk about. Just go to COVID-19criticalcare.com, print off the protocols, take them to your doctor, and get a prescription for ivermectin. Was there another question or another part to that one?
Is ivermectin better than hydroxychloroquine?
Or
what's the difference between the two?
So I haven't really done a comparative analysis of the data on both. There's good data on both. Personally, and again, part of evidence-based medicine is a clinician's personal experience. So you look at the data, then you use your personal clinical judgment and experience and the patient's values. That's a threefold part of evidence-based medicine. So I can just tell you my clinical experience is it's very, very, very effective. I think me and my team of 7 nurse practitioners at our 3 clinics throughout West Texas have seen a faster, more effective benefit with ivermectin. And it's so easy. It's very cheap and affordable. The dosing is easy. You take a dose on day 1 and a dose on day 3. And that's it. You're done. And prophylactically, same thing. It's that easy dosing. You do once or twice a month, depending on what study or protocol you're using. So the ease of it and the effectiveness of it, it's extremely effective.
And I think it's better, the effectiveness of it over hydroxychloroquine?
Between the two, I would go ivermectin. But you can also do both, and there are protocols that call for both. So depending on the individual's risk factors, their age, their comorbid conditions, how clinically sick are they, how many days have they been sick, and that's part of the FLCCC Alliance, again, COVID-19criticalcare.com on their protocol. It's multi-pronged, and Dr. McCullough talks about with hydroxychloroquine, you don't just give it. You give the zinc and hydroxychloroquine and doxy or azithromycin and steroid inhaled and oral if you're more advanced in your symptoms or elderly or more at risk. So it's a multi-pronged approach, multi-drug regimen that they're recommending in these protocols.
And what about stuff like remdesivir, Regeneron, any of that other kind of stuff that's out there floating around?
Yeah, so there are some benefits to some of these other treatments. Obviously, they have emergency use authorizations based off some very limited data, short data. You know, these haven't been around a long time. And the data's, in my opinion, not as impressive as ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine.
Okay, next text. That's interesting. Next text says, well, what about nebulizing hydrogen peroxide and saline? Is that better than ivermectin, or can you use both?
Again, a personal decision you're going to have to make with your doctor depending on your risk factors and your clinical symptoms. So I can't really answer that. But ivermectin is of course, there's no studies on nebulizing hydrogen peroxide. That's kind of an at-home natural therapy without any randomized controlled trials.
It works.
So I can't really speak to that from a medical, and plus I'm not giving out medical advice here. So I can say there's been some clinical benefit reported anecdotally with nebulization of diluted peroxide, diluted NAC, which is N-acetylcysteine precursor glutathione, nebulized glutathione. So talk with your integrative practitioner about that. He may have some experience with that. Going off clinical data, randomized controlled trials, things that NIH, CDC, Texas Medical Board, FDA would consider looking at. It's these studies with ivermectin, so I'd have to say go with that.
And again, another text. So where to get ivermectin, and is it doctor script only? You've answered this, but it's worth repeating because people are always joining the show late and all that. And if someone is in the hospital, what to do? Have you heard of anyone getting this or vitamin D? I guess as it pertains to the hospital. But, again, ivermectin, how do you get it as far as...
You need a doctor's prescription.
Okay.
So go to your doctor, print out the protocol. Again, COVID-19criticalcare.com has all the data. IVMmeta.com has all the data also. And, unfortunately, doctors, a lot of them just don't know this. More and more do. The word has gotten out some, but why is it not on every news program and every billboard and the front page of the Lubbock Avalanche Journal and every newspaper? Why is Fauci, the NIH? I mean, the doctor at the Senate proceedings was pleading for the NIH just to look at the data, and they, as far as I've seen, still haven't made any recommendations on ivermectin. Why is that? I think it's political. That's my personal opinion.
Big money involved on these vaccines.
When there's this much money involved, it's hard to not have conflict of interest when there's patents involved, including at the NIH and Fauci and these government researchers. And I'm not saying not to reimburse people who have put their in intellectual property into something possibly, but they're working for us. That's a government position.
Right.
We're actually their boss.
Right.
So more transparency in that, the conflict of interest seems, again, my opinion, when under an emergency use authorization, which is what these vaccines have been put under. So these are not FDA-approved vaccines. They haven't gone through the FDA approval process. They are authorized under emergency use authorizations. When you look at that emergency use authorization wording, you can't produce a vaccine and give it to the public if there's a good, effective treatment. Now, is that playing a part? Why is the ivermectin data being ignored and not publicized, and the hydroxychloroquine data not being widely publicized? Most doctors don't know about it, but everyone knows about the vaccine. Could it be because emergency authorization use would be pulled or would not be applicable to these vaccines if these treatments were widely available? It's a question worth exploring. I think that's what Ron Johnson and the Senate committee is doing. I haven't spoken about hydroxychloroquine in a while. I'm just looking at the C19study.com. You can look at this for yourself. 220 hydroxychloroquine studies on there, meta-analysis, and 157 of those are peer-reviewed. Some are randomized controlled, some are observational, some are, you know, different epidemiological studies. But overall, they're saying a 66%, if you use it early, 100% of these studies show 66% improvement in whatever outcome measure the particular study was measuring. That's significant improvement with hydroxychloroquine. That's a lot of studies, 220 studies. The chance that hydroxychloroquine is just... that these studies are wrong, that it's just, you know, random chance that these people are getting better with COVID. It's the chance, random chance is 1 in 3 quadrillion. You can read that study again, C19study.com.
Another text, vaccine or not, I have MS and my spouse is 82 years old. Great question.
Yeah, again, I'm not your doctor. You're going to need to discuss with your doctor your personal risk. The reason I do this show and give my opinion and try to back it up with data, when it's opinion, I say opinion. When there's data, I try to quote the data accurately and point you to the places where you can get the data and show it to your doctor, and y'all have a discussion. This is a personalized risk-benefit ratio. Unfortunately, with the vaccines, so... Here's number one. People need to understand it's an experimental vaccine. It's authorized under the emergency use authorization. So it's not an FDA approved. It's authorized under emergency use. So you're voluntarily submitting to the fact that there's no long-term data and it is experimental. There's not the long-term FDA approval process that normally vaccines will go through. So that's number one. Number two, you need to understand there's no virus in this shot, in this vaccine. It's not like they chopped up the virus and you're just getting viral particles, or they inactivated the virus, made it, you know, like the flu shot, inactivated, or even a live virus that's attenuated or weakened. It's none of that. None of that traditional type of vaccine. What this is genetic material injected called mRNA, messenger RNA. So that's DNA. That is genetic information, instructions for your body to produce a protein. So as I think we all know, proteins make up your whole body, not just your muscles, but everything in your body is made of proteins. The instructions to build these particular proteins are in our DNA. So we're injecting instructions, foreign DNA or mRNA specifically, that tell your ribosomes, these protein-producing factories in your cells, to start making this spike protein. And it's a great theory. You know, if the spike protein is part of this COVID virus, and if we can get the body's immune system to recognize the spike protein quickly, then we can gobble up COVID-19 whenever you breathe it in from your sick loved one at home who has it, because that's how it's spread typically. Then great, your immune system will see it quick and gobble it up, and maybe you won't have many symptoms. That's the theory. What the data shows is, and Dr. Fauci even said, the data shows it doesn't really decrease transmission or even your acquisition of COVID-19. It decreases the symptoms. It has no impact on hospitalizations or death. This is what the early data shows. And again, this is all early. These vaccines were just produced. The data is super early. These aren't long-term studies. So there's group A and group B. This is CDC data after the first, this is after the studies, first round of the studies. So in the vaccinated group of 18,000 some odd people, there are three COVID hospitalizations. And in the placebo group, there are three COVID hospitalizations. There were two deaths not related to COVID in the vaccine group, four deaths in the other group not related to COVID. And then there were six cases of lymph node swelling in the placebo group, 64 cases of lymph node swelling in the injection or in the vaccine group, zero cases of facial paralysis in the placebo group, and four cases of facial paralysis, Bell's palsy, in the vaccine group. After the first week, December 14th through the 18th, so the December 14th, there are 679 doses of the vaccine given. December 15th, 6,090 doses were given. December 16th, 27,823 doses. December 17th, 67,963 doses. And by December 18th, 112,807 doses. 112,807. That was the first week. Here's the number of health impact events. This is from CDC's website. And a health impact event is defined by the CDC as unable to perform normal daily activities, unable to work, and required care from a doctor or healthcare professional. So this isn't just a little sore spot on your arm or, you know, some minor cold symptoms. This is unable to work and required a doctor or healthcare professional to look at the people. On December 18th, 112,000 shots were given and 3,150 health impact events were reported by the CDC. So that's about a 3% health impact event. We've read about the anaphylactics, potential anaphylaxis. It's recommended these shots are given in a facility that can resuscitate a person who's having an anaphylactic reaction. We know this is going to happen. They knew it before. It did happen. It is happening. We need to be aware of that. In fact, they've said if you have a history of allergies to food or anything, you probably shouldn't take this. Definitely have an EpiPen around. So we need to be aware of that. 3% health impact events in these 112,000 doses given on December 18th. And these were to healthcare workers. I'm presuming they're less than 60 years old and fairly healthy. The data on less than 60 years old, your chance of surviving COVID-19 is 99.9%. When you combine that that the mortality rate is so minimal and similar to a normal flu for under 60 years old. You combine that with the new emerging ivermectin data, especially prophylactic data, and you combine that with the fact this is a new technology. They say it's been around for 10 years, which it has, longer than that, actually. So we've talked about this before. Robert F. Kennedy really does a good job of explaining this. This mRNA technology and coronavirus vaccines have been, they've been trying to make a coronavirus vaccine for years. And millions and billions of dollars have been put into it around the world after the first coronavirus outbreak, SARS and MERS. They put billions into trying to come up with a vaccine. Every time, the problem was this overreactive immune system response was produced in the animals. So when they would do the animal testing, the animals showed they made antibodies, but they made them in such a way that when they were re-exposed to the actual virus in the community, the animal's immune system had an overactive response, and many of them died. And that was the challenge, was this antigenic priming, they call it. So has that challenge been overcome with these vaccines? You know, time will tell.
Well, the question is, and another text was, Butch saying, I heard the vaccine changes your DNA. Is that true?
It's a good question. It is messenger RNA that's being injected. The previous attempts at this, they were actually sending DNA into the nucleus where our DNA is. And yes, that does change your DNA, but this stays outside the nucleus because it's messenger RNA. We think it stays outside the nucleus, so it won't change your actual DNA, but what it's doing is changing the protein production. So it's new instructions for protein production. Will somehow that get incorporated into your DNA and this mRNA be able to mix somehow? I don't think so. But
is that part of the reason why maybe they're saying, okay, young women are pregnant or about to be pregnant, probably not a good idea.
Well, the question there came out, and this is when a petition was filed with the FDA. Let me pull up the doctor's names who did this. One of them was a former Pfizer rep or vice president, not rep. Here we go. So, Dr. Michael Yeadon, Y-E-A-D-O-N, former Vice President, Respiratory and Chief Scientific Advisor at Pfizer. And then Dr. Wolfgang Wodarg, W-O-D-A-R-G. He's a lung specialist, former head of public health department. They filed an application with the European Medical Agency, not FDA, but the European equivalent, asking for immediate suspension of these vaccine studies, particularly in pregnant women, because of the concern of syncytin 1. Now, this is a protein in the placenta. Women that are pregnant, the growing placenta, express a protein called syncytin 1, and it takes the form of spike protein similar to SARS virus. So the concern is, could there be cross-reactivity? When you make antibodies to the spike protein, will it cross-react with syncytin 1 protein in the placenta of pregnant women? That's the question. It's a legitimate question. It needs to be studied. That's what these two doctors, pretty prominent researchers, their concern was. So there's no data that I've seen on pregnant ladies. There's definitely no long-term data. There's no data where I can really say one way or the other. Is there a concern? Yes. And again, this is part of the personal risk assessment and discussion you have with your doctor. Unfortunately, the CDC, in my opinion, it's unfortunate, they put a statement out that says, no, pregnancy is a medical condition, and you don't need to discuss this with your doctor. You can just get the vaccine. I would tend to lean towards, no, discuss things with your doctor. Get fully informed and make a decision. Again, knowing the mortality rate is higher in young people with influenza than it is with COVID-19. And again, taking into consideration ivermectin data that's now coming out. Again, NIH hasn't made this statement, neither has the WHO. So I know it's a very difficult time for the general public and the layperson to make a decision because lack of information.
Here's a great text, too. So if we do take ivermectin as a prophylactic to keep from getting COVID, how long would that last? Or what does the data show? Like if I'm just normally bumping along, but maybe there's somebody around me that's has COVID and I'm concerned about it,
I don't have all the prophylactic data in front of me, and again, going off memory, the Egyptian trial of 800 healthcare workers, I believe the dose was one dose, so one day, I think it was 12 milligrams they gave on day one, and then a week later, they repeated it, and then they watched them for 3 months, I believe. I've seen other data where it was once a month they took it, just once a month.
12 milligrams once a month.
Yep. So I don't know the half-life of ivermectin. I think it's in the 50 to 70 day range that it stays in the tissue. I know hydroxychloroquine stays in the lung tissue in particular for, I think it's 23 days, many, many days, the half-life. So that's why you can get away with taking it once a month, roughly. Twice a month, some of the protocols. But again, I don't have the data right in front of me to say 100% accurately. But you could comb through the data, ivmmeta.com, and then the Critical Care Alliance website, criticalcarealliance.com, I believe is what I said. COVID-19criticalcare.com, I'm sorry. They have all the data there. You can look at that and discuss it with your doctor.
And that would be kind of a better deal than, say, just run out and roll up your sleeve kind of thing.
Again, this is my personal opinion. I'm young and healthy. I have a good immune system. My terrain is intact. Remember, we've talked about before, equation. We got this equation in medical school. What are the chances a virus or a disease is going to kill you? Disease equals virulence times viral number divided by host defense. Virulence is how powerful is this virus. Viral number, obviously, is the number of viral particles in you. And then divided by your host defenses. Well, I'm confident my host defenses are great. I'm metabolically flexible. My terrain is intact. My probiotic flora is great. All the things that prime your immune system, which the bugs in your gut do a big part of that. You have to have good flora. You want to have your mitochondria highly functional. You want to be well mineralized, well hydrated, well oxygenated, not stressed out. All the things we talk about, the core four and the four pillars, and it's all these things on the terrain. And just the general, all these stats I'm quoting, 99.9% survival rate, that's in a standard American that we know has poor terrain. We're not metabolically flexible as a nation. We do not have diverse flora in general as a nation. So even in these not well maintained bodies, the survival rate is 99.99% if you're young, less than 60. So a personal decision risk benefit ratio, it's very clear. The data is super clear. My own God-given defenses are going to take care of this virus. I don't need to worry about it. Now, when the spirit of fear overcomes somebody and you're so fearful, that will completely undermine that denominator of host defenses. And all of a sudden, just a few viruses, even a weak virus with very little virulence, if you totally decimate that denominator in that equation, virulence times viral number divided by host defense, stress, fight or flight, wipes out host defenses in a big way. All of a sudden, little tiny puny virus comes along, takes you down. That is the truth. This is terrain, not germ theory. Pasteur was incomplete. It was a half-truth. It's all about the terrain. So quit being scared. Turn off corporate media because it's fear-mongering. There's way too much conflict of interest between the pharmaceutical industry and your news programming outlets. Way too much conflict of interest between pharmaceuticals and government officials. I'm sorry, it's just my opinion that there's too much conflict of interest. It's going to change the narrative, and it's fear-based. Completely decimate your terrain. We talked about this on the first video I did. Do not be scared of COVID-19. We said it back in whenever that video was, March or April or May or June, and all the way through. It's all about your host defenses. So focus on the truth, not fear. Fear's from the enemy. We were not given a spirit of fear. So you've got to address that mindset. That's the first number one thing. If you take our class, the peace pillar, that is number one by far. You can even eat a little sugar and grain if you're going to be at peace, in my opinion. But, Wade, don't take that to the extreme.
I'm like, hey.
The sugar and the grain and the the vegetable oils, those obviously cause inflammation too. You'll learn that, learn about that in our class. I highly recommend you take the class to learn all this truth on how to truly improve your terrain, because that's what it's all about. And then if you took a little ivermectin, or again, based off the data, what the data is showing on ivermectin is pretty amazing. Prophylactically, there becomes a real big question mark on this whole vaccine. But again, that's my personal opinion. You have to individually discuss this with your doctor, risk-benefit of what your particular risks are. And you decide. If you want to be part of that experiment, great. There's no long-term data. I'm most concerned. I'm going to try to get this. There's a researcher out of Israel, autoimmunity induced by adjuvants. Adjuvants are the chemicals in the vaccines that help to irritate your immune system. And he's published lots of data on this, the emerging science of autoimmunity induced by adjuvants. Over a million cases of autoimmune disease now he's reporting, correlating it with adjuvants. So there's just way too many questions that need to be answered, again, in my opinion. So do your research, be informed, turn off conflicted corporate media sources, be discerning. If you're a follower of Christ, get in the Word and have your spiritual discernment tuned up a few notches. That's what I'm trying to do. Even I need to be very discerning in the way I approach everything in life. Because the enemy's alive and well, deception's alive and well, the father of all lies is out there alive and well, lying and deceiving. And the love of money, the root of all evil, is being put on full display. So be discerning. Put the truth on and go out in your day and be who God made you to be.
And you've been listening to You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Of course, you can catch You're the Cure every Monday morning right here on the radio online. And for archived shows, if you missed today's whole broadcast, it'll be up shortly at veritasmedical.com. Always check out veritaswellness.com. You can sign up for free wellness classes, or not free, but wellness classes there. And .com, veritaswellness.com. Check it all out today. We'll be right back. Stick around. We got plenty to go.